campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable child care in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. And by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine, as well as nearly 700 BBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more from www.vbsr.org.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. This week on the Vermont Conversation, we are going to be talking all about local food primarily. And for that, we are joined by a star-studded cast of the Vermont local food movement. In the studio, we have with us Mark Curran, the co-founder of Black River Produce, Michael Sear, the marketing director of Skinny Pancake. And on the line, we are joined by Holly Grochner from Vermont PBS and Scott Campitelli, the vice president of content for Vermont PBS. You may be wondering what the role of PBS in local food is. And that has to do with a show that will be airing tomorrow night called Local Motive. And to explain a little bit about what Local Motive is, Holly Grochner, do you want to tell us what is this unusual series that Vermont PBS has teamed up with Skinny Pancake on?
Thank you, David. We're all about local at Vermont PBS, and food is just one of the ways. This is a great series, and Skinny Pancake deserves a lot of the credit for conceptualizing what was going to happen in this series of steps through the food production cycle. And it is really fascinating to watch what happens in Vermont from seed to waste. It's a great step-by-step introduction to all the players in Vermont for the food cycle.
And just as a way of background on local food, as the Local Motive website explains, Vermont leads the nation in local food production and consumption. But even so, it currently only stands at about 7% of our food that is sourced locally. And the Vermont Farm to Plate Food System Plan calls for a goal of 10% local food consumption by 2020. Holly, explain how this came about, that you teamed up with Skinny Pancake to try and tell the story of, you know, the Vermont Farm to Plate movement, which really has gotten national recognition.
Well, you know, there are a lot of local players in the food movement, David, and Michael Sear and Benji Adler at Skinny Pancake came forward and wanted to partner with us to try to give more Vermonters and even people beyond Vermont the story of how this all works. Jamie Williams was very critical in the development of the production, and we lend a lot of distribution and professional videography, and we've taken it on the road and shown it to friends and neighbors in public forums far and wide. We think it's something all Vermonters need to understand, so we were happy to partner with them. It's been wonderful.
And Scott Campitelli from Vermont PBS, can you explain how viewers can tune in to this series, Local Motive, and how long, you know, how many episodes it is,
sure,
and where people can see it?
Sure, David. And tomorrow night is late in the evening, 10:30 showing of the first show of the Local Motive series on our Vermont PBS Plus channel, which is our second HD channel. The program also is available to stream online, and it's at our website, vermontpbs.com/localmotive. And that is available, all six episodes. And Holly mentioned that this really follows the entire food cycle, and that was the objective that Skinny Pancake had outlined when we first discussed it with them, to really take us through that whole cycle from production to waste. And they found a great host, Hayes Dunlap, who does a wonderful job of navigating that. So it's both online and on broadcast, And so anytime at VermontPBS.org.
Well, Michael Sear from Skinny Pancake, tell us a little bit about, we all know Skinny Pancake, or many of us do, as a place that serves good food. We don't think of it as a place that tells this story. So what got you guys to get into the storytelling business?
Well, for better or worse, we're not really a place that does more than serve food. So this idea sort of became a mission distraction, among other things, but we were thrilled to take it on. And it sort of began as a 8-minute promotional piece that was going to have a little bit to do with the Skinny Pancake, but more with the wider local food movement and how food really gets from field to the plates that we serve to guests across the state and into New Hampshire. And then once we started involving the people from Vermont Farm to Plate and talking to some other people about what the local food community needed in some sort of production, it kind of went from an 8-minute clip to 6 30-minute episodes, and the train had kind of already left the station. So I want to thank PBS for throwing us a lifeboat and giving us a place to sort of put this production that we put all this time and energy into.
So Scott mentioned that this the series follows the whole food chain, and I'm just looking at, so there's an introduction, then there's a whole show on processing, one on distribution, then farm to institution, one on the consumer, and one on waste. How did you decide, Michael Sear, or I'm not sure if this is a question for Skinny Pancake, how you guys, well, first of all, how did PBS and Skinny Pancake divide up the tasks involved in making a show, Michael?
So we highlighted, so Vermont Farm to Plate sort of has a food cycle. And what they call it is a comprehensive food system plan. And the food system kind of consists of this cycle that goes from production through processing through distribution to consumption on a institution level and then on an individual consumer level. And then finally with waste, and then once you get to waste, it goes back into the soil and you get back to production. And that sort of was mapped out by Farm to Plate. So when we began this process, we sat down with Farm to Plate and sort of developed the sort of content that would go into this production, and then we began the process of identifying people we would interview, identifying our host Hayes, who, as Scott said, did a wonderful job, and then began the process of this production, and had a couple loose conversations with PBS, and eventually they were on board. So we did a lot of the content creation, and then once we handed it over to PBS, they made it a professional broadcast-worthy production.
And my hat's off to the Skinny Pancake folks, because they really put the miles on to go all over the state and make the connections with a lot of the real movers and shakers in the local food movement. And we spent a good deal of time in the edit room, but they put a lot of miles on their trucks and cars.
You know, we should say, David, that Vermont PBS and PBS generally are master storytellers, and so it was great to meet some storytellers who knew the story of food. And we were delighted to do what we're mission-driven to do on our side, which is get the story out there. So it's been super, and it was particularly nice that there are some really socially-minded participants in the food cycle, like Black River, who gave generously of their time and people to participate in the story as well.
Hmm. Can you tell us, Holly or Scott, who are some of the characters who tell the story of Vermont's local food movement?
Well, that's Holly mentions Black River, which is a very important group, and I know that'll eventually be a segue to bring another person into the conversation. But also efforts like the Intervale in Burlington and food hubs. So what's great about the way Skinny Pancake, working with Farm to Table, organized this is that by following each step, 6 steps in the food cycle, it really led to different players, some who run food hubs for processing, some who, or for distribution, farmers markets, and then institutions like the University of Vermont, who have really made an effort to bring local food into what they serve for their students and staff and faculty. So there's really a mix. Waste is one of my favorite stories because some really interesting characters who have been working very hard in the composting arena, and with Vermont's law that just went into effect mandating composting, it was interesting to see what can be, what the benefits can be. So it really is quite a mix of people.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking this week about Vermont's local food movement and a series that was produced by Vermont PBS along with Skinny Pancake called Local Motive, about local food movement and local food production here in Vermont. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Well, Mark Curran, your name is coming up here in conversation, co-founder of Black River Produce. Tell us a little bit about your, you go back to the beginnings of Vermont's local food movement. How did the Vermont local food movement begin?
Good question, David. You know, we started in 1978 and, you know, in South Central Vermont, and we had a lot of friends that were farmers. So for us, it was just a core philosophy is that we're always going to source product from Vermont whenever we can. And if we can't find it from Vermont, we're going to look to New Hampshire or Massachusetts, and then obviously we're going to go to Florida, Texas, or California to find product. And what is surprising to a lot of people, especially a lot of the young people that are at UVM or living in Burlington, is that for the first 25 years, so literally until the late 90s, it did not help our bottom line at all to promote local produce. In fact, we had a salesman in Burlington that used to, he was notorious for saying, do not send local product to my customers. You know, they didn't want the lettuce. They were afraid it was too sandy or it had aphids on it. The tomatoes were too soft. So we struggled. And then it was finally in the 1990s, you know, Vermont Fresh Network came about, and all of a sudden there was this realization of where our food's coming from and how it's being processed. And a lot of it came from students. I know when I was in college, that wasn't on my radar screen where food came from. But, you know, by the late 90s and certainly in the 2000s, students in Middlebury, Dartmouth, UVM, Champlain, they were concerned about where their food was coming from. And they really pushed to have the local food.
Now, Black River Produce, you've been on the Vermont Conversation previously and told the story of how Vermont, in its early days of local food production, consisted of a lot of small farmers at the ends of dirt roads who had no access to markets outside of perhaps the local farmers market that they would go to on Sunday. What role did Black River Produce play in making a network and a movement out of these disparate farms?
Well, yeah, you're right. They would go to farmers markets, or maybe they would call, you know, five or six restaurants themselves and make the deliveries in their pickup truck the next day. But, you know, most farmers try to spread their crops out through the course of the growing season. So they hope to have corn starting in the beginning of July and have it every week until the middle of September. But invariably what happens is you get, you know, a cold spell, and then you have a hot spell, and that corn that you wanted to grow over a three-week period is all ready in 3 days. And every other grower in the state is in the exact same situation. So now they're like, geez, who's going to move these 100 bushels of corn that I have? And that's where Black River Produce can say, hey, we'll send a truck by, we'll pick up what you've got. And then a lot of the growers just thought, you know, this is what I like doing. I like concentrating on farming. I don't want to spend my Wednesday and Saturday afternoons at the farmer's market. I don't want to have to call and make deliveries to restaurants. I'm just going to work with Black River. Most of the farmers we work with do have a hybrid. I mean, maybe they have a farm stand. They still deal with a few restaurants. But their real bread and butter is coming from that call to Black River. And we have, you know, the refrigerated truck comes right to their farm.
What even gave you the idea to run this truck out to the ends of dirt roads to little farms to even do this?
You know, for us, it was, you know, our, you know, we were selling to restaurants. The restaurants were catering to tourists. Tourists were coming to Vermont because of the landscape. You know, they were leaving New Jersey or whatever because of what Vermont has to offer. So we felt we needed to preserve and save that landscape that they were coming up to see, as to help protect our business. And we just had a, you know, I think Vermont is a real sense of community in this state, and we had a loyalty to our farmers, and we just thought, well, if we're not going to support these farmers, who is? So we just early on made a commitment to local growers.
Hmm. Michael Sear, Skinny Pancake. Talk about the role of local food in Skinny Pancake, and also explain where Skinny Pancake is now. People may not realize you've kind of spawned quite a few offshoots.
Yeah, sometimes it's even hard for us to realize where we are. Our commitment to local food, we have a tagline, it's love local, which means nothing. But in our actual process, it's about, we do call Black River, and it's amazing that Black River has so much local food that they can send us. But instead of just making that one call to a broad line or another supplemental distributor, we make several phone calls to many different farmers, many different niche providers. And then we even go so far as to work with farmers before they plant their crops, so they're growing directly for us, because it's a lot easier for a farmer to grow. You know, Miskell's Organic, for example, grows about 2 tons of basil for us every year. And if he wouldn't grow 2 tons of basil unless he had a place for it to go. So kind of similar to what Mark was saying. And as far as our actual restaurants go, we operate 3 core brick and mortars, one in Montpelier, one in Burlington Waterfront, and then our newest one in Hanover, New Hampshire. We have 2 restaurants in the Burlington International Airport. We operate 2 seasonal restaurants at Spruce Peak at Stowe, and then at Sugarbush. We also have a seasonal school year restaurant at University of Vermont, and then this summer we operated at Shelburne Museum in Shelburne, and then we also have a catering operation called Love Local Catering.
Hmm. Wow, I did not realize how you have multiplied. well, back to Vermont PBS here. Holly Grochner, what did you think about this story? And I don't know if this story originated with PBS or with Skinny Pancake. What made it seem like right for the Vermont PBS audience?
Well, you know, Vermont PBS viewers love to eat. And so I think most Vermonters are interested in food. We're a very foodie state. And so in service to the state, it seemed a good fit. But I have to admit, on the day that the folks from the Skinny Pancake walked through the door, I said, really? We're going to do a whole story about the food cycle, including waste? Huh. How's that going to go down? But it was a fascinating story, and the wonderful thing that was able to be accomplished with the help of NOFA and Skinny Pancake and others is it's a story of big players and their role, little players and their role, the state and its support. There's so many people that come together to tell this story, and that made it very exciting and made it inclusive and the kind of story we love to tell and love to share with Vermonters. I should take the moment, David, just to be sure that we mentioned that there were, in addition to the people on the screen, a lot of supporters that came together for this, including Ben & Jerry's and City Market and Gardner Supply and the Hanover Food Co-op and Hickok & Boardman. The list is long. Price Chopper, Sodexo, and the Community Foundation, and, of course, Farm to Plate. So, It was a community effort.
Is this for Vermont PBS are creating local series? Is this how common is this? Is this something you do a lot of?
Well, you know, Vermont PBS has been creating local television, homemade television, for 50 years. And we're celebrating our birthday this year, but due to the guidance of Scott Campitelli and others on our team, we are piling on the local programming right now. Scott, you want to say something about that for me?
Well, one of the exciting things is that the Plus Channel, 6 nights a week, is all local. Primetime is local on Plus 6 nights a week, and also we have a lot on our main channel. We've been working this fall on water quality with our Saving Our Waters series. And local is really the most important thing to us. And that's because that's what viewers tell us. That's what our members say they want to support. And I think in Vermont, it just makes an awful lot of sense. So it's watching locally, not eating locally, but It's all local.
We like to say we're putting the Vermont into Vermont PBS.
Uh-huh. Well, Michael Sear from Skinny Pancake, as you were reciting all the locations that Skinny Pancake is now, what do you attribute this success and the demand to?
I think that's a complicated question. I think the easiest answer is the quality of food we serve. And that's not to give us any credit, but to the producers and the suppliers that are making really great fresh meats, produce, cheeses, all sorts of specialty foods that extends to our beer, widely available for us to turn around and sell to guests in the locations that we pop up in. Aside from that, I'd like to think we sort of extend the Vermont tradition created by brands like Ben & Jerry's, Seventh Generation. The list goes on to sort of have that Vermont brand. So as Mark said, people come to Vermont for the landscape, and we try to create that sort of landscape experience within our four walls.
Hmm. Mark Curran, there are some ambitious targets out there. The New England Food Vision is seeking to achieve half of all food consumption in New England to be sourced locally by mid-century. That's a tall order when we're at 7% here sourced locally in Vermont. How do we get from 7% to 50%?
You're right. That is a real tall order, and I hope everybody realizes how beneficial that would be to Vermont. Because when we're talking about, you know, the New England population getting 50% of their food locally, well, it's not going to come from Connecticut or Rhode Island or Massachusetts. Vermont's the big agricultural state in New England, so the impetus is going to fall on us to try to get to that 50%. And I think people are excited, and it actually, if you look at the numbers, it's feasible. It can be done. People are going to have to change their buying habits, but that's already happening. People, just in the past 10 years, there's a huge realization of how the industrial food complex came about in America. And they, for the past 50 years, they've been incredibly efficient about producing low-cost food. And there's a lot of benefit to that. But now people are realizing, okay, what did that detract from, taking all those shortcuts? And we're looking at the health issues by, you know, having really low-cost calories. And so now people are starting to turn that around. But let's take advantage of the shortcuts that the big, you know, industrial food growers learned that made sense, you know, scale, you know, efficiency of scale and things like that. But really, do we need to put antibiotics in all our meat? Do we need to give them growth hormones? And people are saying, no, we absolutely don't. So in Vermont, what do we grow really well in Vermont? We grow grass really well in Vermont. So let's turn that grass into protein, you know, sheep, you know, pork production, and certainly beef production is, as well as, you know, the dairy industry that's well established in Vermont. There's lots of room. You know, every town in Vermont has hundreds of acres of pasture that's not being utilized. You know, somebody's just brush hogging it twice a year, and we can turn that into food production.
Hmm. Well, we're talking on the Vermont Conversation about the local food movement, and also about a series that's going to be airing on Vermont PBS starting tomorrow and on the web, called Local Motive. We've been joined by Holly Grochner and Scott Campitelli from Vermont PBS. And in the studio, we have Mark Curran from Black River Produce and Michael Sear from Skinny Pancake. Mark and Michael are going to stay on, but Holly and Scott, I want to thank you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
David, it was great to be here, and thank you.
Okay, and we're going to take a short break for the news, and we'll be right back and talk more about local food. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman, and we're spending the hour this week with some of the leaders of the local food movement. We're joined in the studio by Mark Curran, the co-founder of Black River Produce, Michael Sear, the marketing director at Skinny Pancake, and in a few moments, we'll be joined by Samantha Sheehan from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and their Buy Local book. We're going to go back here to Mark Curran. Mark, talk about how you create a market for local food, because it doesn't just exist, as you alluded in your first half hour. There's cost issues. You know, people don't necessarily want to pay a little more or do whatever is involved. So how do you create the demand?
So, yeah, I'm not sure that we create the demand, but you're right. The demand, that's the demand has to precede everything. We can't sell product unless consumers are asking for it. So we're great. We're very fortunate that in Vermont we have Vermont Fresh Network that we mentioned. I mean, they're an advocate for local food. They go to the chefs and the institutions, and they celebrate, you know, when a chef can make a direct connection with a cheese producer or a grower. Vermont Feeds is another, you know, food education every day. Abby Nelson was very active in getting grade school kids involved in knowing where their food came from and visiting local farms. I think those kids, when they got out of grade school and high school, they went to college, and those are the students that were demanding local food at the university. So,
you have an interesting story to tell, though, because Black River Produce is not just produce. It's also meats. You had to first get people used to the idea of buying local meats. Tell that story of how the meat side of your business started and what happened.
Sure. So that was never our intention to get into the meat business, but people said, you know, geez, Black River, you guys do a really good job promoting local food and hooking us up with all these local growers. Why don't you do it with meat, too? And we said, all right. So we put a program together, and this was about 7 years ago, and we walked it out, and we told people, hey, we've got local Vermont hamburger, and the response was great. How much is it? And we said, it's $4.75 a pound. And they said, well, we're paying $1.75 a pound. And they just didn't see the advantage of paying that extra $3. So we sort of put that to bed, really, for a while. And then people kept pushing, no, you need to do this. So it was about 4 years ago, we rolled it out again, and the difference was amazing. We said, hey, we've got a local hamburger. Oh, how much is it? It's $4.75 a pound. And the response was, I'll take all you have. I mean, just, you know, people reading Michael Pollan's books, Omnivore's Dilemmas, you know, Fast Food Nation, a lot of information on where our food comes from and is it the best thing for us. So now there's this tendency that people are looking for real food. And so we were able to produce that. We tried to get other people that were already in the meat business to do it. And after a while, we realized that wasn't going to happen unless we did it ourselves. So fortunately, 2 miles away from our distribution plant was an old Ben & Jerry's ice cream factory that had been sitting idle. 50,000 square foot, where they actually used to make Peace Pops, and now it's a slaughterhouse. And one of the great things that we are able to do with that slaughterhouse and meat processing plant is give tours. So every week there's high school kids coming through, there's groups of college kids, and certainly our chefs are welcome to come through all the time. And there's windows on the whole, the meat processing area, where we make the bacon, where we make sausage and grind up hamburger, but also when we put in the kill floor, we put viewing windows on the kill floor, and everybody said, that's a big mistake. You don't want to be letting people see. And we said, no, people need to be educated about where their food comes from. It has to be totally transparent. And now we get a great response when groups come through to educate themselves and now they can make a real decision. Do I want to be a vegetarian or, you know.
So they actually see the animals being put down?
They do. And, you know, to get the attention of 16-year-olds is not the easiest thing in the world. But I'm always surprised, you know, there'll be two or three kids in the group that say, you know, can I just stay outside? And of course you can. But most of those kids, they've got their nose pressed right up against the glass there. And then when it's
and
done,
what kind of animals are being processed there?
Hogs, beef cow, lamb.
So what do they see? How are those animals put down?
They're put down with a bolt gun. So it's sort of a process where the gentleman that's doing using the bolt gun just takes great patience and great care to make sure he gets it exactly right. And the hogs are done with this little electrocution method. So it's, you know, Temple Grandin helped us design the facility. So it's animal welfare approved. It's certified humane slaughter. Mistakes do happen, you know, when you're slaughtering 5,000 animals a day, you know, if two or three miskills, we try to make sure that within 20 seconds it's taken care of. But people, once again, just need to know. People, you know, we've gotten so far away from where our food comes from in the past 60 years. People go to the supermarket and they see a package of a steak and they assume, okay, this is where meat comes from. Well, it doesn't. So you need to see the whole process. And that's one of the great things that that local motive does. It's a great education piece for the food system.
Michael Sear from Skinny Pancake, can you, I'm sure you're the marketing director for Skinny Pancake, so part of what you are doing, no doubt, is looking down the road. What is the next big thing in local food?
I think it's kind of what Mark said, is that we're hopefully, we're not at a plateau in local food consumption, but we're hitting the ground running. It's just going to keep going up. And people are starting to look for things like transparency and where their food comes from. I don't think my mother would go and see what's happening on a kill floor, but recently a friend of mine brought a Necky class down to the kill floor, and she's a vegetarian. And she was like, oh, I got to see this. I want to see what's going on here. And recently we sent our staff down there, and it was, you could see in their eyes when they came back how amazing it was to actually see where the food is coming from, because people sort of want that connection to their food. So I think the next big thing, we're sort of on it right now, and where we're going to see the growth is people are going to keep asking for more of it. And hopefully we'll get beyond this 7% number, and we'll get to 50%.
Where does Skinny Pancake see, I mean, have you kind of hit the point where you are done expanding, or do you see yourself, are you on a sort of an aggressive growth mission?
I think once you get aggressive, you run into challenges with the core mission, and most of the growth we've done year to date hasn't necessarily been intentional, but it's been organic and opportunistic. It's been Stowe or Sugarbush saying we have this space available and we need someone to come serve. We want people to be able to consume local food in our larger institution. Can you come in and operate? And those have sort of been opportunities we couldn't pass up. Hanover, New Hampshire was intentional, and I think there'll be some more growth along the way, but our day-to-day is about making sure that we're maintaining our core mission and continuing our ability to source more food locally and providing a good experience to our guests and to our staff.
What is the core mission of Skinny Pancake?
So I'll read the mission statement. It's quick, but the Skinny Pancake's on a mission to change the world by building a safer, healthier, and more delicious food shed while creating everyday enjoyment that is both fun and affordable. And I think Black River and their ability to sort of scale up and provide a big-scale operator like us with enough local food to serve to our guests every day at an affordable price, and we try to make it a fun experience for the guests, and that's sort of the mission. But if we had to decide that we needed to serve commodity meat one day to meet our current needs, that would completely defeat the point of what we're doing here.
What are you doing at the ski areas?
Basically, a somewhat scaled back selection of our wide menu, but crepes is our bread and butter, so to speak. That's our vehicle for which to serve local food. But yeah, we do beer, wine, locally sourced, and then our crepes.
So Mark Kern, as we've been talking about going from 7% of our local food consumption to 50%, we have been talking about the demand side, how we get consumers to get there. What about the supply side? You've mentioned we can make more use of our land, but are there enough farmers in Vermont and farmland and capacity to get us to where half of our food could be locally sourced?
Yeah, those are all big challenges. So I think we do have the farmland, and people are starting to grasp new technologies for, you know, hoop farms and greenhouses and tunnels that growers are using to extend the growing season. We work with a lettuce grower in Danvers, Mass., Little Leaf Farms. This gentleman invested about $75 million in greenhouses. The lettuce is planted in trays. As the lettuce grows, the trays move apart, so you don't need to thin them out. They're tipped over after 6 weeks, and a blade comes along, cuts the lettuce falls into bags, the bags go into boxes, the boxes go on pallets. No human hand touches this lettuce. It's an incredibly efficient way. And that's, you know, if it wasn't for the Jamaicans and the Mexicans with the ag process to bring in immigrant labor, there aren't enough Vermonters to do the work. So that's something we have to convince ourselves that we need to be bent over and picking strawberries and lettuce. We need to come in with a better immigration policy to give people the chance to start out in agriculture, or we need to mechanize it more. But that is going to be one of the real challenges. The land is there. It's just how to efficiently operate it.
And that's where Vermont bumps up against national and international politics, where what happens in Washington matters here in Vermont. Let's bring into the conversation Samantha Sheehan. She is with Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, and Samantha works with the Local First Vermont program and the book, the Local First, the Buy Local book. Samantha, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
Tell us about the Buy Local book, especially as we're in this shopping season. What is it?
So Local First Vermont is, as you said, a program of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. And our mission through the program is to educate all Vermonters on the importance of buying locally. And we do that through incentivizing local buying and promoting locally owned and independent Vermont businesses. And the project that is core to that endeavor is the Buy Local book and now the Buy Local mobile app. So we do have several pages of resource information in the book, which is also when you download the app, that content is all free with lots of good data on the importance of buying locally, the local multiplier effect, the state of women in business in Vermont, and information about individual merchants and businesses around the state.
Well, tell us a few of what you think are the most compelling factoids about some of the things you just mentioned, the role of women and the role of, you know, what this contributes to the local economy.
Yeah, so the local multiplier effect is the concept that the money that you spend with a local business is actually amplified rather than kind of sent away in the way that it would be if you spent money with an online retailer or a chain retailer. So for every dollar that you spend with a Vermont-owned business, 45 to 50 cents is reinvested in the community. With an online mega retailer, that would be only about 1 cent. And with a local like franchise chain retailer, that would be about 15 cents would be reinvested locally. And then when you look at what happens to that 45 cents that's reinvested by a local business, it becomes amplified as it moves around the local economy. The data that we have estimates that for every $100 you spend locally, if, say, just 50% of that, so if every $100 you spend, if 50 of that was spent locally, it would actually turn into $200 in your moving around your local economy from the $50. And then when you look at, for example, women in business, where the existing data is a little bit upsetting or disappointing, where it is very encouraging is when you look at how small improvements could be amplified for the benefit of the Vermont economy. So here I'll quote, and this is from information that we pulled from Change the Story Vermont. So if the percent of women-owned businesses that if the percent of women-owned businesses that are employers match that of male-owned businesses and had the same average receipts, it would add $3.8 billion to Vermont's economy.
Why would, explain that. Why would having women-owned businesses generate more for the economy?
Because only a fraction of the existing businesses are owned by women as opposed to men, although we are, of course, 50 to 51% of the population of Vermont. And of those businesses that are women-owned, they make 19 cents on the dollar to a male-owned business. So if
19 cents on the dollar. Now, we've heard about 79 cents and stuff. This is a tiny portion of what men make. Why is there that disparity that a woman-owned business makes one-fifth what a male-owned business makes?
You know, it's a really, really complicated question. Just like gender parity in leadership in general is complicated, and pay equity is really complicated. And I would direct anyone who is interested in learning more to Change the Story Vermont, because they have incredible and really recent data that kind of does a deeper dive into some potential causes and solutions. But like I said, I think what's encouraging is when you look at the way that small improvements could amplify and mean real dollars of revenue for the state. So if you just took the existing businesses that we have that are women-owned and they each employed one more person, that would result in over 5,000 new jobs in Vermont.
Wow.
Yeah.
So talk about the nuts and bolts of how people in this shopping season can get the app and where they can get the book, Buy Local book.
I would love to. So the Buy Local book and mobile app each have over $3,000 in savings to more than 250 Vermonter-owned businesses. And we are in about nine counties of Vermont, including Rutland County, Windham County, Chittenden, Washington, and Lamoille, and Addison. And so you can find the book at over 50 retailers, and there is a list of them on the VBSR website, so vbsr.org, /localfirst. And you can also download the mobile app for free from Google Play or iTunes, and it does cost $20 to activate the coupons. The resource information that I mentioned is free. The coupons cost $20 to activate. But to encourage Vermonters to use the app for their holiday shopping, we are running a promotion. So if you would like to use the discount code SHOPSMALLVT, one word, no spaces, and all capital letters, that's SHOPSMALLVT, then you would save $5, and it would only be $15 to activate the coupons on the app.
How many years has the Buy Local book been available?
This is the 8th edition of the Buy Local book, and this is the second year that we've published the mobile app.
Hmm. Do you have a sense of how it is being used or its impact?
Yeah, we do. So the book, the paper coupons are harder or impossible to track, but one of the really cool things about the mobile app, in addition to the fact that, you know, that it's more green than the book, is that we're able to get a lot of really cool data that we can in turn share with the merchants who are in the book about how shoppers are using the app around the state. And so we launched this edition of the Buy Local book on the mobile platform on September 1st. Which was also when the books hit the stores. And since then, we've had 500 Vermonters activate their coupons, and they visited over 270 businesses and saved over $4,000 collectively. Hmm. So 500 Vermonters have saved $4,000 shopping at almost 300 Vermont businesses since September 1st using the app.
So that is $200,000 in savings. 500 times 4,000. I think I have that right.
Oh, no, sorry. $4,000 total,
$4,000 total.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay.
It's around $20
good.
Per person.
Well,
so
spare
far.
Me my back in math. My kids
it would be, that would be
reliable.
Incredible. That's
that
a number to
yes.
shoot for.
Well, I want to return to Mark Curran here as really one of the pioneers of the local food and local everything movement in Vermont. What did you imagine when you started started Black River Produce however many years ago that was? You know, what did you picture to be the trajectory of this thing?
Nothing close to what it eventually became. I mean, we actually started at a small, it was a natural food store, and we were selling, you know, vegetables, and we had a little farm stand out front and thought we would just sell to some of the local. We were in the town of Ludlow, ski town at Okemo. We thought we'd take care of the five or six local restaurants there, and that would help us fill our Volkswagen van to bring vegetables back to Ludlow. And chefs talk amongst themselves all the time, so they were getting stuff from us and said, wow, this is back then. You know, we're talking, as I said, late 70s. That Vermont was at the end of the line for anything fresh. So what we delivered to them was better than what they were used to. They started talking to other chefs. So then we were doing 20, 30, 40 restaurants. And at some point we said, well, okay, this makes sense to go into the wholesale business. Forget our little national food store in Ludlow. But even then, we never, you know, you just sort of apply yourself every day. You don't really think down the road what could happen. But it's, you know, certainly worked out well for us and hopefully for the state and the farmers in the state.
Hmm. Do you see it now? Black River Produce was bought about a year ago. Tell us about that and what that means for the future.
So Reinhart Corporation, which they bought Burlington Food Systems over 10 years ago. So they had always been sort of hovering around and would approach us every year and say, hey, you know, we'd like to acquire you guys. And my partner and I would say, no, you know, we have our own niche. We're not going to become a broadliner. And then they came back to us last year and said, okay, we get it. I mean, we had been eating their lunch for the past 40 years, taking a lot of business away from them. And I think for a long time, they just thought, oh, this local food movement, that's an anomaly up in Vermont.
And so they're like an institutional food provider,
right,
service.
Yes, they are. But their family, it's not a corporation. It's three brothers that started selling Schlitz beer in North Carolina in the 1960s, and now they're one of the biggest privately held companies in the United States. But it's, like I said, it's still a family business. And they needed to differentiate themselves from the U.S. Foods and the Sysco's, and they realized that what Black River was doing is the way the industry and the way the smart chefs were going, and people were much more concerned about their food and where it came from and how it was grown and is it sustainable and is it regenerative to the soil. So they said, you know, we need to embrace what you guys are doing, and they have. You know, they said, we're not going to change things. We're going to take what you guys do and move that out to our other distributors. And I was telling Michael earlier that, you know, before when a farmer would tell us, you know, he had 500 cases of broccoli crowns, we'd say, well, we could take 150, but we can't take all 500. This summer, we were pretty much able to take all 500 cases and move them to the other distributors that are in New England for Reinhart. So, Black River is still Black River, but we're helping Reinhart do things the way we've done things.
And Michael Cyr, I'll give you the last word from Skinny Pancake. What are you most excited about looking towards the future?
That's a big question, but I think kind of what Mark said is sort of pushing Vermont food beyond the borders and then continuing to encourage people that are already in the state that the more they realize that 7% number can be a lot higher and it'll have a lot of value for not only the local community but for them as individuals. That's what I'm excited for, just seeing that growth continue to rise.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Mark Curran, co-founder of Black River Produce, Michael Cyr, marketing director of Skinny Pancake, and Samantha Sheehan from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. Thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation. And that does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all shows at VermontConversation.com. I also want to let listeners know that tomorrow night we're going to be, DEV is going to be over at Bridgeside Books. We're going to be a conversation with Bill McKibben and Ken Squire that I'll be moderating, and you should come on over and hear that. And that does it for this week's show, and we will be back next Wednesday at 1 with another Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by...